Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're talking about the franchise tag deadline coming later today. But first, we have to start with
Packers news of the day.
Packers news of the day. Cornerback Jarrett Bush has been arrested for disorderly conduct and public intoxication on Sunday. This happening in his native California. I personally have checked records from the Solana County Sheriff's Department, and a Jarrett Lee Bush was arrested on Sunday early morning, the wee hours of the morning, in which bail was set for him. I have not called the Sheriff's Department to confirm the identity of this Bush, but seeing as the first, middle, and last name all match that of the Packers cornerback, and it happened in the Packers cornerback's hometown of Vacaville, California, the odds are that this is indeed the same Jarrett Bush in question here. The good news is, if you're, you know, just kind of hearing this for the first time and hearing that, oh no, another Packers player is arrested, it's already the second of the off season after LaTroy Guyon was arrested just a few weeks ago. The arrest is for disorderly conduct and public intoxication. There was no indication that this happened while Bush was behind the wheel or anything like that. Now, I certainly don't have details here. There could be more to the story. It looks to be, a rather minor incident here. We await details, but I mean, from first glances here, things are all right here, at least as far as seriousness is concerned. Now, that being said, I remember when news first broke of LaTroy Guyon, the very first reports simply said marijuana possession. And you're thinking, well, oh, he's got a little bit of marijuana on him. Well, ended up being a whole lot more than that. So until kind of, things become more clear here, we're still kind of unsure of what exactly happened and awaiting more details. Now, this is the same Jarrett Bush that is scheduled to become a free agent in just over a week's time. March 10th, the start of free agency begins. In fact, it's less than a week until the 3-day window of contract negotiations can begin with other teams. That starts on March 7th, although teams can't officially sign players to contract from another team until March 10th. But, kind of wondering if this will impact Bush's chances of re-signing with the Packers or signing with any other team for that matter. It doesn't help that Bush is now no longer on the sunny side of 30 years old, and perhaps that's the more, the bigger thing at play here, as opposed to maybe what appears to be a minor arrest. Maybe Jarrett Bush's chances weren't very good to begin with. Now, that's not to say he doesn't have a year or two of, production left in him, especially when we're talking simply about a guy who is known for his special teams play in Green Bay. We've seen time and time again that Jarrett Bush as a cornerback slash defensive back slash slot corner, I guess, is where he's best suited, but still not all that effective and regularly picked on when he has had the chance to play. Not to say there haven't been examples over the course of 9 years where Jarrett Bush hasn't done well. Namely, of course, everybody will remember his interception in Super Bowl XLV against Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger, kind of the highlight of his entire career. Then there was the play, actually two plays during the 2013 season of Jarrett Bush covering Atlanta Falcons tight end Tony Gonzalez, a future Hall of Famer. He intercepted one pass, broke up another. The absolutely fantastic plays that, you know, pretty much helped the Packers win that football game. These stand out as it's two very, very good instances of what Jared Bush can do as a defensive back. But when we're talking about 9 seasons of, you know, play here, cumulative, you know, maybe if we're pointing out 2 games, maybe that's not such a good thing in the grand scheme of things. So Jared Bush, though, has been a very, very good special teams player, basically the best special teams player in a Packers uniform for the better part of the decade. You can maybe make the argument that he started his decline, though, this past season. He was not, usually he's, you know, as you've seen over the past, you know, Mike McCarthy's tenure in Green Bay, we'll say. Jared Bush has kind of been like the leader in special teams tackles year in and year out. And that wasn't the case this past season. You kind of saw him got passed up on that list with by some young guys. I know rookie Jayrone Elliott had even passed Jared Bush this past season. So maybe it's kind of a changing of the guard here that we're seeing in that Bush is now past his prime and, you know, younger guys are coming up. And maybe even if the Packers were considering re-signing him, maybe his best days are behind him. I wouldn't say Jared Bush, even had this hadn't happened, I wouldn't say he was a candidate for a long-term contract. He would probably be one of those guys in the category of one-year deals, kind of one-year prove-it deals until he simply doesn't have it anymore. Could I have seen Jared Bush re-signing with the Packers for 1 year on almost a minimum deal? Absolutely. I mean, I easily could have seen that for, you know, one more season of special teams play. Now, remember, too, this is a guy that has been elected a Packers special teams captain for the postseason 5 seasons running. And that, of course, as we've talked about on the show before, an honor voted upon by his peers. That is how much respect people have for Jared Bush in the Packers locker room. Or maybe I should use past tense, had respect. I don't know if his arrest will change that at all. And again, like I said, it's kind of early before we have more details of what happened here to find out what exactly Bush did. But, we wait and see. We wait and see. It's one of those things we kind of have to let things play themselves out. It's I imagine more information will be, you know, kind of revealed later today. It's rather early on the West Coast right now, so I don't imagine the Sheriff's Department is probably yet releasing all that much information, and I don't know what they will release other than just the bare bones minimum details that's already, you know, available for public consumption on the Sheriff's Department's website that anybody could read. So, That's what's breaking here on a Monday morning. Actually happened. The arrest actually happened on Sunday, kind of just hitting the news wires now, so to speak. But Jared Bush arrested for disorderly conduct while under the influence. So we wait to find out more. Now it's time for
the day ahead
in the world of the Green Bay Packers here on a Monday. It is, as I said earlier, the deadline to place franchise tags on players league-wide as it relates to the Green Bay Packers. Pretty much the only candidate for the franchise tag is wide receiver Jarrett. Pardon me, I'm getting my names mixed up this morning because Jared Bush is in the news. Wide receiver Randall Cobb is the only candidate to receive the franchise tag. And even that seems unlikely. The franchise tag is expected to be $12.8 million this season for wide receivers. And assuming the report is correct
that came out a week ago, a little over a week ago, that Randall Cobb is seeking a deal worth approximately $9 million a season, it would seem quite unlikely that the Packers are going to place a franchise tag on him that's worth in excess of more than $3 million on top of the, basically the expected going rate for Randall Cobb's services. The $9 million makes sense to me. I can see that very much a fair market price for what Randall Cobb can command and can expect to receive. Assuming that is what Cobb wants, I find it hard that a deal has not been struck already. Now, I mean, Randall Cobb certainly has every right to take this up to free agency, even into free agency, if he wants. He's under no obligation to re-sign with the Packers. Maybe he can get $10, $11, $12 million out there somewhere. I doubt it, but hey, he's got every right to do it if he so wants. Now, I'm sure if you're, the Green Bay Packers are just saying, let's settle on something that's fair. What would you, be okay with? And if that's $9 million, and that ends up being the best deal that Randall Cobb gets, then the Packers would be like, let's get this done already, so they can focus on other players as free agency, begins here in the upcoming days. So, you can understand maybe why the Packers could be frustrated, perhaps. It's not quite so easy. I mean, there's a lot of, I's that need to be dotted and T's that need to be crossed in a contract. And like I said, I've written here at Cheesehead TV, the main things that need to be hammered out are A, the number of years, which we don't really know what Cobb wants. And I think that could be the biggest sticking point in the deal. And B, the amount of guaranteed money he receives. The Packers would obviously probably like to have him under contract as long as possible, but they may have to compromise a little bit in order for Cobb to hit free agency once again in 2-3 years down the road. I could see that happening as well. I certainly do not believe a report. You may have heard this. It was on social media all over the place a little over a week ago, not even a week, less than a week ago, a report from Jason LaCanfora of CBS Sports, a respected journalist, sports journalist, that, people have come to believe what he says goes. I know I respect his work, but I don't believe what he wrote for a second, and I'll just read it. It's very brief here. He's got a little, basically a notebook on, items going on in the NFL. And here's what he writes about the Packers and Randall Cobb. Jason LaCanfora of CBSSports.com writes, quote, "The Packers know that Cobb's market is likely to get out of hand and have focused on keeping other free agents. They continue to discuss a new deal with the agent for tackle Brian Bulaga," sources said. "And I bet they get their man in the end. Same with nose tackle LaTroy Guyon. I'd be pretty surprised if they did not re-sign him. His legal issues may be resolved shortly. And especially with fellow defensive lineman B.J. Raji, a free agent. Guyon did a very nice job thrust into the starting role this past season. And the Packers are very good about keeping their value free agents." End quote. Of course, the key part in the beginning, saying that the market for Cobb is likely to get out of hand and the Packers have focused on keeping other free agents. I don't believe that for a second. And I don't know how if you want to really parse this thing apart, and maybe it's just that at that moment in time, maybe LaCanfora was like, found out that the Packers, we've just finished discussions with Cobb for the last 5 hours and a deal isn't done yet. We're going to take a break and come back to this in another day or so while we work with Brian Bulaga in the meantime.
if that's the case, okay, I can see that. But as far as like, you know, stopping negotiations with Randall Cobb, focusing on other free agents, just letting Cobb test the free agent market. No, I don't believe that for a second. In fact, Randall Cobb even took to social media. He kind of, you know, had a vague cryptic tweet, but he's like, he said something to the effect of, don't believe everything you read in the media. And, you know, you put two and two together, and it's basically in response to this report from LaCanfora. So, like I said, if you're worried about Randall Cobb, I would just take a deep breath. It doesn't really even matter what happens with the franchise tag deadline here. I wouldn't be surprised in the least if the deadline passes today, 3 o'clock p.m. Central Time, by the way, and just nothing happens. I don't think the Packers want to place the franchise tag on Randall Cobb. And even if nothing happens, they still have the entire week here, 5 days of exclusive negotiating rights where Randall Cobb cannot even talk to another team yet until March 7th takes place. He can't sign with another team until March 10th. So there's still a week here in which there's really not a whole lot of worry. So, you know, I'm just saying, you know, calm down if you're worried out there. I believe the most likely scenario is that Cobb ends up coming to a long-term contract extension with the Packers. When that happens, is it today? Is it tomorrow? Is it Friday? Is it the start of free agency on next Tuesday? I don't know, but I think that's what's going to happen here eventually. The one thing that kind of gives you pause and makes you think that the Packers could possibly place the franchise tag on Randall Cobb is that it's sometimes used as a placeholder. You know, if the Packers place the franchise tag on Randall Cobb, he absolutely cannot negotiate with other teams. He doesn't have to sign the, you know, it can be placed on him. He doesn't necessarily have to sign it. And basically teams use that as like, okay, we now have until July to work out this contract extension. We have, you know, March, April, May, June, July, you know, 5 months to work a contract out. The problem with that, however, is if you place the franchise tag on Randall Cobb, it kind of sets precedent in that you're saying you're willing to give him the $12.8 million a season when they really don't want to. They you know, I would have to assume the Packers are going to be in this $9 million a season range, give or take a little bit. They don't want to have to pay him $12 million a season. So that's why you avoid it as well, because, I mean, once you place the franchise tag, you're locked into it. Even if you don't, you know, July comes and you still haven't worked out a long-time deal, Cobb can, you know, sign the one-year deal for $12 million, $12.8 million, and just hit free agency again next season while he's still relatively young. So that's the risk in doing so there. And if you're thinking that anybody else on the Packers roster, and in particular Brian Bulaga, it has any chance of receiving the franchise tag, you're deluding yourself. Brian Bulaga is not a candidate for the franchise tag. For offensive linemen, it's $12.9 million a season. Basically, right tackles in the NFL don't even come close to receiving that kind of money. That's basically double what some of the highest paid right tackles in the NFL get. So it's just not going to happen. I could see, you know, going through your brain, like considering it, you know, might they use it on Brian Bulaga? But then you think about it for a second and you just realize it's not really realistic. So don't expect that to happen. Don't expect any transition tags to happen either. I really can't. So, So that there's you know, basically your franchise tag information here, as the deadline comes here on a Monday. Like I said, 3 p.m. Central Time, technically 4 p.m. Eastern Time, where league offices are headquartered in New York City. So find out later today if the, you know, by slim chance it would be used on Randall Cobb. Don't expect it, but we'll find out later today. Kind of wrap up today's show with our segment
Expert Interview.
This will be the last one. I've collected a ton of interviews from the NFL Combine when I was, you know, spent last week in Indianapolis, and you've heard some of them already. Just, you know, last week played you a few audio interviews from the press conferences with players, and I wanted to share one last one here on Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central. And the reason I chose this one today is, if you haven't heard, also on Monday is the start of the Pro Day circuit, in which individual universities host workouts for their draft-eligible players. They work out in front of scouts, in some cases in front of coaches, general managers, personnel people. And, you know, basically they take place for the next month and a half, pretty much at every major college in the entire United States that has a football team, and even some of the smaller ones as well. And the first ones are held on Monday, those being five places: Wake Forest, Minnesota, Virginia, Troy, and Tennessee Chattanooga. And what I have today is an interview with Wake Forest cornerback Kevin Johnson. He's kind of considered a top five prospect at the cornerback position. And he's probably not first round material, but you can probably think that, you know, once the second round starts, this might be a guy that comes off the board sometime, you know, maybe pretty fast in the second round, depending on, you know, how highly teams value him and you know, maybe what a team's need for a cornerback might be. But, you know, regardless, a good one, maybe not a great one, but, you know, maybe appropriate here also for the fact that, you know, coming on the day that Jared Bush was arrested, maybe the Packers need some depth at cornerback. Don't really know what's going to happen with the other cornerbacks scheduled to become free agents, namely Devon House, Tremont Williams. Those guys going to become free agents here too. So anyway, maybe the Packers, should they lose some of these guys, think about taking a cornerback. This is a good one. Wake Forest cornerback Kevin Johnson, 6 foot tall, 188 pounds, little bit thin frame, but a guy who's projected to go pretty high. And you'll notice the press conference here. He declined an invitation to take part in the Senior Bowl. One of, you know, basically a handful of players that kind of chose not to participate in that venue, which is a little bit controversial when a player, you know, declines an invitation like that. So you're going to kind of get his reasoning here, and that's how the interview starts out. Then you can kind of hear some more of the questions being asked. I've set it up enough. Wake Forest cornerback Kevin Johnson here.
It was more than just that. There was risk involved going, doing things like that. And, I was just advised not to play in the game. I really wanted to play in the game, but, I just finally made the decision it was best not to play.
So you said gaining weight was a part of the reason. Have you been able to gain weight and not lose speed?
Right. Yeah, for sure. Throughout the training, I weighed in the day at 188 pounds. And throughout training, you know, I was at that weight running well, so I was carrying the weight, maintaining it.
With you being from Clarksville, I mean, obviously, there's a convenience thing there with the Ravens. Have they spoken to you?
I got grabbed by them at the train station, but it got too hectic. I actually didn't meet with them, but I have a formal interview with the Ravens. I think I have excellent feet, hips, ball skills. I'm a competitor. I'm a student of the game, and you know, I'm a playmaker.
One thing that keeps coming up when I look at different reports, so to speak, about you is that you're a better zone guy. I saw that you could play man also. Can you talk about your ability to fit in multiple schemes?
Yeah, I mean, me as a cornerback, I can do it all. I can play press man, I can play off man, I can play zone from a press alignment, zone from an off alignment. I just think I'm an all-around cornerback, and I can do it all, and I'm not limited in any way.
Kevin, when were you about 150? Was that like 10th grade or senior year?
Senior year of high school.
And were you effective even at that? You felt like that was, didn't hold you back a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, coming into Wake Forest, I started 7 games as a true freshman. I had ability. You know, I was just a late bloomer. My freshman year of high school, I was 5 feet tall and I was 96 pounds. So I'm just growing every day. I'm still growing now.
Where do you hear you're going to be drafted?
Second round.
Do you feel like you'd be a first rounder at that time?
For sure. I mean, I'm here to prove that I'm the best cornerback in the draft. And that's what I'm about to go out there and try and prove.
What are you doing about in training? What is probably a realistic time for you?
4-4.
4-4, like a low 4-4?
Yes.
How do you think you stack up against the other cornerbacks in this year's class?
Like I said, I think I'm the best cornerback in the draft. I think I'm a lockdown cornerback.
Down at Wake, you have another guy on the opposite side that's pretty good. Talk a little bit about your teammate, Buddy Noah, who's not here.
Right. I mean, he's an excellent cornerback. I mean, me and him came in together, and we both started. We've been starting alongside each other for the past 3 years. I mean, he's a very good cornerback, and me and him push each other every day in practice to be a better player.
Injuries, things like that. What kind of advice did he give you in terms of preparations?
Just to prepare like a pro. I mean, he's learning, and so you know, everything he learns, he instills that knowledge into me. So you know, it's kind of like, it's almost like we're going through it together. So you know, he's helping me out. He's like a big brother to me.
I talked to Brian Medusen, just a little for your high school coach. How much did you learn from him, and how much do you still kind of talk to him about just this process?
I learned a lot from him. You know, he definitely really had confidence in me as a player, and it helped me, you know, going throughout my career as being a confident football player at a young age.
You were one on what Aaron was asking a minute ago. What was it like growing up with Michael? Can you talk about that dynamic and maybe making you guys better?
Mm-hmm. We've been competing against each other, you know, since we were, you know, 10 years old. We played on the same little league team, high school team, and college team. So, you know, it was my roommate in college. So, you know, we would compete, whether it's, you know, video games or if it's one-on-ones out on the football field. So we try and push each other, make each other better.
On the field as a corner, I mean, obviously, there's going to be something that happens. Mm-hmm. You're going to be in an adverse situation.
Right.
You got to have that short memory.
For sure.
Take me through just a situation in life where you went through a difficult time, and how did you adjust and deal with it and then move?
My freshman year, after my true freshman season, I was academically ineligible, and you know, seeing that, you know, when you have something taken away from you that you love, you know, you learn from it. You know, I was able to mature as a player and as a young man, and it helped me in the long run.
Do you think it was hard to get noticed at a program that wasn't always, you know, playing the primetime television games? You didn't have a ton of wins during your time there?
We play in a conference that has great football teams. You know, Florida State, Clemson. You know, teams like that. So, you know, when you're playing against teams like that, you're going to be able to show what you can do. Also, Wake Forest has, you know, put some cornerbacks out in the league not too long ago, like Alphonso Smith, Brandon G, guys like that.
Who are some of the best receivers you've faced?
Throughout college?
Yeah.
I'd say Sammy Watkins, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, Kelvin Benjamin, Michael Campanaro.
And how'd you stack up against them? How'd you do?
I think I did pretty well.
I
that was something, you know, talking with the coaching staff, you know, it's something that we talked about, and I wasn't going to do it again. I kind of, you know, was a little too emotional out there. I think I like to play with a swagger when I'm out there on the field. I did a gesture that I shouldn't have done, and I learned from that. Yeah, for sure. But I mean, as you play and you get more experience, you learn to channel that emotion and, you know, and make yourself a better player in other ways. I think it's a great strength for me. I think I'm a longer cornerback. I got size, I got speed, and I got quickness to change the directions at the point of attack.
In terms of like strength and things like that, how much in the past year have you physically become more
mature? I've grown, like I said, every year. I came into college, I was 155-pound cornerback, and now I'm 188 pounds. So every year I just, you know, continue to grow. I was a late bloomer, and now this is where I am right now. Yeah, I haven't had any drop-off. I've gotten better.
So there you go. Wake Forest cornerback Kevin Johnson, who will work out in front of scouts on Monday at the Wake Forest Pro Day. And that'll do it for today's episode of Railbird Central. Thanks for listening in. Thanks for listening to our interview with Kevin Johnson and the whole rest of the show. We have episodes every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 8:30 a.m. Central Time live here at Cheesehead TV, as well as podcasted later in the day that we probably even get a bigger audience from. So thank you for the download or stream or however you listen to the show. Thanks for doing so. In fact, just one last notice. A week from today will be the landmark 500th episode of Railbird Central. So looking forward to that. We've got some special guests on the show. And in fact, we're looking at a new special time, I think a half hour earlier to accommodate our guests, 8 o'clock a.m. Central Time next Monday. I'll be revealing our guests on the show later in the week, but looking forward to that. So kind of mark that down in the back of your brain as we get closer to the date a week from today. That'll be March 9th. But anyway, thank you everybody so much for joining us on the show today. We'll see you later. We'll see you in 2 days on Wednesday for our next episode. On behalf of everybody else here at Cheesehead TV, I'm Brian Kirvu. We'll see you later, folks. I leave you today with a song called Valley of the Jig by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See ya. Go Pack Go.